a poem by Kabir that sums up the dilemma of the current Oxfording picture and the talk this evening. Friend, please tell me what I can do about this world I hold to and keep spinning out. I gave up sewn clothes and wore a robe, but I noticed one day the cloth was well woven, so I bought some burlap, but I still throw it elegantly over my left shoulder. I pulled back my sexual longings, and now I discover that I'm angry a lot. I gave up rage, and now I notice that I'm greedy all day. I worked hard at dissolving the greed, and now I'm proud of myself. When the mind wants to break its link with the world, it still holds on to one thing. So tonight we're speaking about the fourth Oxfording picture, and I'll read the placard. Chicken Little was right, the sky is falling. No, that's not the right one. Through extraordinary effort, you seize the ox. Still, its will is forceful and its body spirited. Sometimes it runs high into the mountains. Other times it disappears into the mist. So we have our task cut out for us. And I just appreciate this talk because we allow ourselves to sort of look at all the different obstacles that come through in the course of a spiritual practice. And the spiritual practice can be summed up the ox of awareness, or the ox of now, or the ox of the moment, and the I who is trying to awaken. Now, it's very interesting. It's a predicament that isn't easily figured out. And for a long time, it causes a great deal of turmoil, which is the depiction of these ten series. And the predicament is that I want to be in the moment. And the problem is that I can't be in the moment. It's like two becoming one. Two can't become one. You can't carry two into one. That's better said. Two can become one by giving up two, but it can't carry its two-ness into one. Can it? This is math, people. This is as far as I go in my math. So, what's the problem with that? Because, said differently, awakening is not of the past. It's present tense. And the sense of I believes itself to be real because of its past, because of our story. How do we know who we are is because we keep telling ourselves who we have been. And that's how we know who we are and who we're going to be. And so how can someone who is totally convinced in their past, in fact, there isn't someone and the past, there's just the past speaking, enter the present tense? Because the present tense, you have to give up past tense. And so there's a verb conflict there. This is as far as it goes in English as well. So, but we keep trying to bring the past tense into the present tense. We keep finding or trying to strategize. We don't want to give up the past tense because everything that has been meaningful to us and occurred to us has occurred in the past. And we have a whole system of relating to the present because we have gone through the past a number of times. And from security points of view, we know the present from having gone through those trials and tribulations that have made us an experienced person, sophisticated in whatever else. So we bring that to the present, and that's what we want to move into the present tense with. And somebody says, no, you can't do that because those verbs are in conflict with one another. Well, he said, I'm going to sure as hell try. You can't tell me that. And so we do try. And we try every conceivable way. The first things we do, of course, is to try through the forces that have allowed us to be accomplished in the past. And those forces have been our volitional will and effort and strategies and planning and influence and control and on and on. And so we give that full force of effort into the present tense, trying to present tense ourselves. But what we get is just tension. Because we don't really understand. It's not all conscious. Much of what is needed in all this play of the scenes is an understanding of what the sense of self is. We don't really understand. We think it to be something that it turns out that it isn't and never has been. And so part of it is just confusion. Part of it is we just really don't even know what we are, and we're just trying to ride this spirited ox to our destination like we have everything else. And the way we think is in terms of present, past, and future. The way we behave is in terms of longevity of self and three-dimensionality of the world. We've configured the world in a way that the ox can't possibly enter. Can't possibly enter. And we haven't figured out, we just figure out there's trouble afoot. Because when I sit down, I don't really enter the present. I just feel the past coming at me, don't you? Don't you? You feel all of the issues in your life when you sit down. All of the things that have grabbed you back from the present and keeps you very embedded in the past. And so you feel drawn. You don't feel here. Mostly we don't feel here, do we? I mean, I'm not trying. Mostly we don't feel here. We feel there and then. We feel if and when. We don't feel here. We haven't resolved our place on the earth, really. And we're troubled. We're deeply troubled. But we want to resolve the trouble. That's what's initiating this whole series of activities. We want to resolve the trouble. We don't like being troubled. In fact, we got into this thing. One of the reasons that motivated us to get into this thing is to get over this trouble, to get through this trouble, to finish this trouble. But then we see what we have to do is to enter now is to become nobody, because nobody is not a troubled somebody. But wait a second. What else do I get besides no suffering? What am I losing here? You see, what's the balance here? What's the balance? I want to know what the quid pro quo. I'll give you the quid. I want the pro quo. What's going to happen? And then we hear words that don't entice us towards the present, that really scare the bejeebers out of us. Words like emptiness and no self and we hesitate. There's a fear response to that. Yes, we would like to be untroubled, but let's weigh in on this thing a little bit here. I like being where I am. I like knowing who I am, and I like having like a little space around that I can protect, and my time to do what I want to do, and I don't want to be homogenized into some blur. which is how I perceive oneness. I'm getting the joke. I don't know if anyone else is. And I just, you know, I kind of like my distinction. And I'm better than most of you. So I kind of like that. So, but when I'm asked to give up the accompanying image, you know, I mean, we can frame it in ways that are as benign can be, that we, all we have to do is give up a concept, an idea about ourselves. There's nothing else that needs to be given up. It's not something that we have to amputate a limb. It's just an idea that we've got that we are something that we're not. That's all. We give up an idea, a false idea. You'd think it'd be so easy, wouldn't you? That we'd all want to give up the false idea. But no, because we have too much at stake in that false idea. It's like you bet everything on black on the roulette table. And by God, it better come out black. Or you're going to kill yourself. Right? It's like no other options here. I'm not sure what that had to do with what I was saying. So we put everything, we put ourselves at stake here. And we, you know, when we start looking at what an image, what the image contains, it contains our sense of purpose. Now, you know, when we really start looking at the inward workings of this thing, where the false idea unfolds, what it unfolds around, what it includes, I mean, what, you know, my values, my purpose, my intention, my views and opinions, whoa. My reason for being, those are strong cards we have to play. So we can frame it as just an idea, which it is. Those are just ideas from the idea of me. Those are just further proliferation of ideas from the idea of I. My idea, when I have an I, then I have a purpose and intention and all those things. Those are just the accompaniment of the I idea. But when we start realizing how much we have at stake in those provisions of self, well, you know, suddenly the lamp looks like something I kind of like to buzz around rather than to enter. The flame, I'm not so sure I want to dive in there. Let me keep some distance and I'll hover back a ways. If it gets too, if the heat gets too intense, I'll back up a little bit. And so we keep ourselves buffered from the central purpose of what we're doing. Because our ideas haven't come to an end. Fair enough. I'm not trying to force anyone to give up their ideas prematurely. We're just stating the problem here. And most of us have to take a long journey through the course of our ideas to see that they're not worth holding. And we do that through insight. And that was we catch glimpses of the nature of the ox. Picture 3. By every once in a while, there's a hard training in picture 1 and 2. This is intense. This isn't just business as usual. We've got to apply, because we look at the state of our mind and we don't even know, we're a complete mess. When we first start, our minds are just all over the map. We didn't even know that before we sat down. And not only are they all over the map, but they can't steady themselves. The attention can't steady itself on anything. It's enmeshed in the ideas. So all we are, our whole attention, the awareness that we're trying to seek, is enmeshed within the ideas that we're trying to seek it from. And we don't know what's what. And it's very easy to say in that moment, oh, you don't have, you know, from the Advaita Vedanta point, from the, you're all one, you don't have anything to do. I was going to say bowl, but ox. Thank you, Susan, for laughing. It just isn't sufficient. There's training that needs to happen here, and intense training. We need to get that mind steady so we know what the state of affairs is. We need to be able to see what's in front of our eyes so that we can even discern that there's a problem. And so much of that early practice history is just teaching ourselves that, steadying our attention so that we can discern the difference between the ideas we're having and the reality that is being governed by those ideas. What's on the other side of my ideas? And then every once in a while there is an opening, a piercing through the lens of our ideas, our opinions. And that's an insight. And that's the ox. We see the ox. We see what the possibilities are when we aren't living within just our opinions. And it just absolutely floors us. It takes a hold like nothing else. Everything, romance, sexuality, everything pales by comparison to this one. Because you and I see together what this world is really made of. It doesn't mean we're ready to go there, but sober we are. We know the problem now. And when we know the problem, we have seen that ox. And again, the readiness to give ourselves over is still, well, you can see. I mean, the journey is long and complicated. Not by the fact that it need to be, but by the fact that we resist giving ourselves up in ways that we don't understand. We haven't figured what we will get in return. I mean, what's the advantage to this thing? I certainly see the disadvantage. I'm going to lose myself. What's the advantage? And so losing ourselves is not seen as an advantage. Perhaps one of the advantages is in alleviating suffering, because it will not enter with the ox. Get a sense of that. You know what, my final instructions, I just did this in this last retreat. Now I'm doing it for the beginning classes. They probably don't even, well, never mind. But my final set of instructions now in meditation came to me from an image I had of Looney Tunes cartoons. And the image I saw in this meditation over the weekend was, you know how the Bugs Bunny cartoons, you know, at the end, very end, it closes down. There's this big hole light and it closes down, and then you have one of these Looney Tune creatures grab the hole that's closing and force it open? You know, Bugs Bunny or somebody? Come on, nod your head for God's sake. I know, okay, thank you. So there's this image I have of whoever, Bugs Bunny, forcing this hole, closing hole up. Now that's really what most of us relate, how we relate to meditation, isn't it? It's like we're going to open this damn thing up. And you get to see your cartoon face. And my thought was, I'm not teaching this thing right. Because there certainly is a lot of truth to initially feeling as if, listen to the words I'm using, the feeling as if that's what's happening as we try to establish awareness in our practice called mindfulness, which is self-controlled awareness. Self-controlled awareness is mindfulness, right? We instigate it. We prolong it. We're the governor and controller of it. And when we lose our attention, it's gone. And then we get all upset to bring our attention back. And that's that cartoon character opening up the final frame. So I said, no, I'm not going to teach that. Well, I'm going to teach that when appropriate, but I'm going to also offer a different instruction. Sit and know that awareness is here. Basically, is the sit within awareness, not with awareness. When we sit with awareness, we're the operators. I'm sitting with awareness. But sit within awareness. It's pre-existing the sitting. Now, right as I speak, allow your feelings to, allow your the sensations to relax, the will to relax. Because, you see, the volitional need to open up the last frame of the cartoon is the two forcing entry into the one. But what about the pre-existing one? I mean, we aren't forcing oneness. If we have to force oneness, forget it. It's the game is already over. We've lost. We can't push everything together and mesh them into a big ball. It's either there or it's not. And by God, I am going to let myself be there and not force myself to be something, to be away from it. Because every time I try to establish awareness, I'm reasserting the sense of me, through the force of effort, and I'm creating a two that's trying to force itself into one. And we are so unbelievably stubborn on that department. We don't, you see though, here's the conflict, is that we believe more in ourselves than we do in one, in the truth. And so as long as we believe, and this is a crucial point for all of us to hear, as long as you believe, each of us believe, more in ourselves than in the truth, we are going to force our will upon the truth. And, listen carefully, you can lose the Dharma completely because your faith is in you, not in the Dharma. And at some point you're going to become frustrated in your ability to enter the Dharma, and so that frustration will either cause you to change your strategies or leave cynically, bitterly. Some of us have not obtained the threshold where this is a no-return proposition. It's very iffy for a long period of time because of that simple fact that we believe in ourselves more than we believe in the truth. Now, at some point, a threshold is reached where we have tried to assert the power of me to such an extent that we are worn out. Through every form and attempt and manipulation, it simply has not worked. What catches us when we have been, when our work ethic has been violated? has been abolished is faith. What was always there prior to our worth act, what catches us is what has always been there. Right? We're not talking about formulating some kind of God that's going to catch us, or something that is another opinion or idea of the mind. That's no better than formulating my sense of self is going to catch me. This has got to be real, or I have nothing to do with it. Nothing. It's not going to be a projection of my mind. It's got to be there, which means I drop my arms and surrender to it. I just absolutely give in. And we are never going to give in as long as we believe in ourselves more than we believe in reality. At this point, this threshold, we have reached a point of no return. And surrender is the right word. Because at that point, we're willing to die to ourself and our own power. And I don't have any idea. I've never been caught before. I have no idea what if there's a net below this tightrope I've been walking. But people say there is, and I can't get across on my own, so here it goes. And you fall off the back end of a boat. And then the ox in its majesty, in its wonder. And that's the point of no return. Now, there's no going back. The Dharma cannot be taken away. And I may journey away from it because I still get distracted. I have a lot more frames to go here. But there's a point of no return. It's like the cells know, not just your mind. It's not a mental thing anymore. It's the cells of your body. With such certainty, there's no argument. So, somebody come up with a counterpoint of view, you let them stay in the pain of that opinion. Well, I don't have to put up an argument. Why do we have to argue it? It's there for all to see. We argue when we aren't sure, or when it's an opinion, or when it's a belief. When it's one idea pitted against another. But when it's certainty, then the convincing is over. Now, let's talk about some of the conditions that are important for this phase of development. Of ringing in the ox. And the reason that it feels like such a struggle is that the disposition of self is still very much there. We can't forget 10,000 years of human history within us, or 2 million years, or however many eons. That's tied within the fabric of human consciousness. And it's been a consciousness of struggle, of war, of endless mutilation and death and terror, along with moments of kindness and other things. But when we look at the human history, it's not the kindness that we see. We see the destruction of ourselves, the environment, other species, on and on. We have not been a good species to this planet by anyone's calculation. The rest of the species should be thinning our herds. They could really do some great benefits to the earth. So, I lost my point. So I'll go to another point. So, there are things that we have to, you know, we have to work towards. And when I started making out this talk, writing this talk, I thought, oh my God, I can't say that. I have not said that. I do not want to say that. Please don't make me say that. And now I'm going to say that. There are cultivated states of mind. You see, when I'm because now I throw you all off the immediacy of the moment, that are very helpful in quieting ourselves sufficiently for us to know what we are and to be able to enter the one. It's hard to do it out of rancor. Be angry or fearful and see how oneness everything is. It's anything but, isn't it? As we sit quietly with ourselves, establishing some focused tranquility, calm, abides the seven factors of enlightenment, believe it or not. When I started looking at them, I thought, oh, that's where they come from. Our very nice states, it doesn't mean that the one isn't there in the middle of rancor, anger, or fear. It just means we can't see it. And so there are states of mind that come as byproducts, not focused accomplishments. This is the essential point, because as soon as I say it, everybody says, oh, I'm going to go off and work on that one. And as soon as you do, you're as far from the ox, you've left frame one. You aren't even looking at the right tracks. So I'm saying this, but I do not want us to make it into an end, into a goal for ourselves. There are states, cultivated states, that come as we develop this training, as we are willing to sit with ourselves, as we're willing to look and see what is there, as we do not bring more reactivity to what is there, as we begin to relax and allow ourselves in relationship, the states of mind begin to develop. And those states provide, now not everyone has to do that. Some people are naturally, we've all met people who have a natural ease, just a natural ease about them, or tranquility or calmness. I used to have a boss that was so calm, I just wanted to keep doing something to rouse him. This was long before my Dharma days. And just natural. And so it's not adamant that everyone do this. So the training, for most of us, our minds are just too frenetic. We've been build up the momentum of busyness and frenetic and anxiety and self unworthiness, all of that stuff, and it's just it's a huge mess of angst. And that won't fit through the eye of the needle. Because it's all thought-driven, tension-driven, you see? It's like, oh my God, it's all me. And there's no ability, there's no tranquility, there's no space to be able to perceive what is true. So it's like, So that is for many people, not for all. So don't do this all only thing. I have seen people walk out of the woods or somewhere and just and be awake, or they just never accumulated the stuff that most of us have. But for those of us who have, then sitting does begin to dispel some of that tension. So we think less. And our thoughts aren't so self-centered. So angst, so anxious. That's a tremendous achievement, not because it gets you any closer to the ox. It can't get you any closer to the ox. The ox is here. You can't get any closer to here than where you already are. But you don't know that the ox is here. And the knowing keeps you suffering. The not knowing keeps you suffering. See the problem? And the states of mind get you closer to the knowing. Okay, so that's I really want us to understand that. And but again, and here is, as soon as I mention something like that, then off we're running, because it's an easy accomplishment. The sense of self loves to become more tranquil. So I can take that one on. That's a task, because it's a cultivation. Time-centered, has to do with how much sitting you do or whatever, or has to do with certain ways you configure your relate. You know, the whole practice comes forward. It's a practice. It's everything. It's like, oh, right, I got it, man. I'm into this now. And then we're two. And then the ox is, I don't know, some other continent, because it ain't on this one. I just hear this, let it ring. Okay. Now, the second quality that allows this journey to unfold so that we're actually even touching the ox. I mean, you know, up until this point we saw him, but we haven't touched him. Now we've got a leash on that sucker. And he is fighting us, but we have at least, we're in proximity. We got a sense of this thing. And what's all that rope? See, what's between me and that rope? Well, one of the things that's between most of us and that's the length of that rope is the relationship we have with ourself. And believe me, it's not pretty. And this is another very, very difficult confrontation to ox herding, is the confrontation of the actual experience of living ourself as ourself, instead of running from ourself trying to be someone else. In improvement or in accomplishment or in status or in whatever. But to live with ourself as ourself. Sims is now using paper clips for my microphone. We do have the money to buy a pen. But trying to find... Okay, so... If we could cut that out of the tape, that would be really... So, where are we here? Oh, okay, so the sense of the relationship we have with ourselves. It needs to be addressed, everyone. Let's wake up here. We need to address this thing. It's not pretty. Look in the mirror and you'll see. And I don't mean physically. See what you see emotionally in that image. But we need to clean this thing up. We need to start appreciating who we are. And it doesn't take a lot. It takes a right orientation to what we are. We have been misguided by our thinking about who we are, because we keep bringing in the past mistakes, the shame, the guilt, and all of the resentful things and that people have done to us and we've done to others. And all of that has just built up a huge blockage of any sense of appreciation when we look into that image. Now, let's sober up here. look at that thing and look at it. You see, that's the beauty of the practice again, is that it shows you the building blocks of what we have what that relationship is built upon. And all these building blocks, when seen in their unique and simple form, thought, emotion, there's nothing wrong with any of them. No matter whether the emotion is positive or negative, it doesn't matter. There's nothing wrong with any of them. And that's easily seen. And somehow, when those blocks form themselves into a structure called me, I can't stand it anymore. But if the ingredients of a stew, every ingredient is healthy, then the stew is going to be healthy. It's not going to be poisonous. So don't look at this image and say, look at the building blocks. Look at what we are composed of. Look at just a reaction, a thought's a thought, an emotion's emotion. Let's stop struggling with this thing called me. Because we're not going to approach the ox avoiding me. Or circumventing the appreciation that's needed, because to be here is to be oneself, totally, without any objection whatsoever. It's to open this up like this. We step into ourselves. And the self, when it's stepped into with that firm intention and confidence, is no more from love, not from aversion. From love, it melts and withers and leaves. Just evaporates. It never was a thing. But we have to love ourselves out of existence. You see the work, so don't get sober about, oh, I've got so much to do. You don't have anything, just look. All we have to do is look. How hard is that? Just look. And see what's there. And the third thing, is you have to get tired of carrying yourself along a little bit here. And I don't mean that in terms of self-aversion. I mean just the burden of having an image. Just the sense of trying to prop yourself up all the time. It's like a Bobo doll. You know, one of those dolls that you blow up that has a leak. You know, and so every 5 minutes you're down there blowing on that little plastic thing to get it going straight again. It's really hard to carry it around. And because we love ourselves, we've reached that point, we don't want to burden ourselves with something that's needless. And we begin to see that the image that we carry is needless. And so what has us move out of our image is not some should. I should do this. I've read it in the books that this is the right thing to do. Now let me just do it. Let me rip this thing away from myself. You can try that. But it doesn't work. It's the burden of having to do it. And if you see it isn't true, and you see yourself strong enough because of the love of self, we see that we're strong enough to hold the opinions that come at us that we were afraid would come at us because, and that's the reason we formed an image, to keep those opinions that we projected were coming at us at bay. Now we don't care whether they come at us or not. There's little other reasons to have an image if you don't care what other people think about you. That's about the only reason that we have an image of ourselves. That and the security, the feeling of fear, partially because of the projections of others, but we're we have some trepidation about entering the moment and what is there and what all that. Other projections, really. So now we're getting closer to the ox. I remember at one point in my practice, when I saw the ox unmistakably for the first time, I went to my teacher and tears were just streaming down, and I said, you know, I never would have gotten into this had I known what I just saw. And I said, because I have no home to go back to. There's no return. He understood. So there are rude awakenings, rude awakenings on this path. It's only because we haven't adjusted our system to fit the awakened spirit that we're dependent upon those things that we see now we can't no longer depend upon. But the dependency can still persist. And that's the struggle. That's the... But you know, you move right through it. And it doesn't... The duration of that struggle isn't terminal. It doesn't last a lifetime. And as we are willing to face the new dawn without the old projections, something very wonderful starts happening. We start feeling the pleasure of being awake. The value of wakefulness, the benefits of wakefulness. There's no question that there's enormous benefit to this. From in the ego, when it goes back and then it sees, the awareness sees and it comes back and informs the ego, and the ego can quiets down, doesn't object so much. The mind stops resisting the transition from 2 to 1, because it sees there's no fear. It's not, and so it stops its fear, creating fear, to protect the organism from what it fears oneness is. It releases the need to scare itself, because it's hard to talk about in terms of benefits, because it's not like I'm being benefited. It's just everything is wondrous. Without suffering, without tension. So the thought of turning around and going to your old home of self doesn't arise, doesn't even hold an option. Now that doesn't mean that the historical momentum of the consciousness of humankind, the collective consciousness of this species, isn't the mara. Another way of saying it in Buddhist terms, Mara, M-A-R-A, that which is the that incites dualism, instills dualism, Mara, our karmic momentum, that just rolls, just gives up, lies down. No, it's still, you feel it. And some creatures crawl out of the cave of behind us in the dark of the unconscious and come rushing up and with fangs and but you know what? You're standing at the mouth of the cave, and that creature, when it starts coming up to the light, it changes It's the image of Mara shooting arrows at the Buddha, and in mid-flight they change to flowers. It can't reach you. So at this stage, if you just bear with me as I talk goes a little longer, is what I call also the application of insight. We begin to use our life as practice. Practice is no longer sitting on the cushion, doing that once a day, and we forget about it the other 23 hours. It becomes, we are so attuned to the reactive patterns within us and the suffering that ensues through that reaction that we are the present. The presence is there regardless of formal practice. And so the investment into our life as practice, and then sitting is really secondary. If you do it, fine. If you don't, fine. Sometimes it's really nice to sit, but it's not like it changes anything. And this is the application. There's no time off now. It's not like I'm on the clock all the time and there's some kind of... It's just that there's... What is that? It doesn't make any sense to talk about it in terms of time. And for when those areas of Mara still bite, when those arrows still get through, we meet those moments. The awareness meets them. Just boom, like that. Just like that. It's a system you can't shut off. But you don't want to shut it off. There were times when I was fabricating my mindfulness, when I was at the cartoon door, when I wanted to shut it off and could. But this, there's no shutting off because there's no will to shut it off. Now let's move together. We have the wherewithal, everything that we need. Each one of us in this room have what we need to march this thing forward. And we have the support we need. We have the teaching. What excuse are you going to give yourself when you're on your deathbed for why you didn't do it? I leave you with that thought. Thank you. Can we sit for a minute or two? As you're sitting here, apply the final instruction. It doesn't mean that you don't go back to the previous instructions, but just from time to time, don't bring any intentionality to be aware. Just sit in awareness. Feel the state of presence pre-existing your intention to be aware. You have to be very relaxed and at ease, not in your mind thinking of how can I get this to do it. It has nothing to do with your power, your volition, your will. It has to do with your willingness to release that. And you can get a sense. Okay, all. Good, thank you. I enjoyed giving the talk tonight, which is kind of fun for me. Sometimes I'm tired and other things, but tonight was very enjoyable. So any questions or comments about anything that we... there going to be this? Okay, yeah. Yes.
You talked about this sort of
yes.
trying hard thing that happens.
Yes.
Sometimes where you let
go. Yes. Sure. Question is about effort and is a very good question. Thank you, Chris. And where we see what happens to ourselves when we don't put forth the effort to be aware. Now, I'm not taking that phase of practice away from anyone. Most of us willfully struggle for a long time in our practice, and it has a place because that's their understanding of who we are and what we are trying to do. We have to always move in accordance with our understanding, not some Dharma talks understanding, right? And for some of us, we are, and each of us, remember that these pictures are spirals, not linears. Each of us, at some point during the day, quite likely, are in that point in which we are grinding it out, right? And the mind is taking us away and we're bringing us our thought. But I just want to throw out a different perspective than that you're doing this thing. First of all, in those moments of tension when I'm losing my concentration, my connection, my contact, and I'm lost in thought, are you responsible? Is it your mistake for getting lost in thought? Have you chosen to be lost in thought in that moment? No. You just find yourself lost in thought, don't you? It wasn't any mistake you did. So first of all, don't take responsibility for something you have nothing to do with. Okay. Now, suddenly I wake up to the fact that I have been thinking. Was that your will that woke you up to the fact that you had been thinking? Or did you assert your will after you woke up to the fact that you had been thinking? You see, this whole thing has never been from your will. You've just claimed a reference. Oh, it's my fault that I fell asleep and now I'm going to try harder to stay awake. Let me give you a different reference point for staying awake besides your strenuous effort. And that is intentionality. What do you really want for your life? Because that's the way your mind's going to go. If you want wakefulness, it's going to wake itself up. If you want status, it's going to find a way to get that. If you want the pleasure of thinking, it's going to go there. And you can't fool it because it is you. Don't try to say, I really want to wake up, but I love thinking. Because your love for thinking will bring thought back in and you will lose reference because that's where your intentionality, the energetic, that which is the truth in each of our, in each of us, the truth of what we want is what operates energetically to get what we want, not our volitional decision. You can force yourself into a container, but it won't last very long before your mind will want to come out because it's not, just not happy there. That's why this whole thing works according to our understanding, not according to our will, not according to what we want for ourselves, but what we understand. So we have to understand the nature of our existence is painful in order to want to be abiding in awareness. We can't, unless we see what we have already isn't working, why would we want something else? So see, so much of my Dharma and other people's Dharma and Dharma in general is understanding how our lives are limiting and creating a kind of rub that just is unbearable at some point. Because we start looking at it and we see that we create our own suffering. And you go, why am I doing this? Well, I'm doing it for my desires and fears. And then when that's realized, your intentionality no longer goes to desiring and fearing. And then wakefulness happens because that's the backdrop of what is when we are not formulating hypotheses on top of that. I'm unusually clear. Better get it now, because believe me. Yes.
I think I have been trying this, and I guess I'm going to ask this now, I've been trying this in the practice, is trying to experience, I guess, the presence or awareness through the senses so that I can pay attention to what I actually see or what I actually feel without all the judgment.
Yes, good.
And so I think I experience more awareness that way. And I guess I have
yes.
to check it. I mean, it seems like if I just pay attention to what the body senses, then I can experience awareness on a much more real basis.
Yes. She says that she experiences awareness through the senses, which is the door to awareness, right? So don't, and the Buddha talked about the four foundations of mindfulness, one of them being the body, and Tuari, knowing you as I do, I think it's a perfect foundation. Okay? So, alright, so just for a moment, you see, we teach awareness through the senses, don't we? Being aware of sound, sight, smells, taste, sensations, and that thing. That's awareness of form. Right? Okay, so let's just for a moment just be aware of awareness of form. Be aware of your body. Be aware of sounds. Okay, so now I'm going to take you a step further, not rushing you. What is it that holds the senses? What is it that surrounds the senses? What is it, what is it that knows the senses are arising? That sound is occurring, that sight is happening. That is the formless awareness. That's awareness of formlessness. That's awareness of awareness itself. Not awareness of forms, but awareness of awareness. Get a sense of that now. That is where presence comes in. Now, mostly what we do is just be aware of forms. I see this, I see that, I know you, you know me, this, that. We just go from one form to another. I leave here, I go to my car, I go to the car, home, tuk, 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 everything forms all along the way. Knowing this, exactly, identifying every. Okay. So where is the formless that holds all of that? What is it that sees out of your eyes? Not what do you see, but what makes it capable? What is it? How is the capability of seeing possible? Whoa! This is something else now. The movement of spirituality is from adherence and domination of form in our life to the formless that still sees and can identify what it sees if it wants to, but doesn't have a directive relationship to just form, is free of form dominating consciousness. I'm going out there too far, and we're also heading towards the end of the series here. So I just, but I don't mind. But let's go back, okay? Let's go back to struggling with the ox, because I don't want to take us too far, too quick. In fact, I think I'll end the talk tonight. So thank you all.